南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。
Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. How are you today? I hope you're well, safe. Oh, I jumped to another part of this same book because we've been in this new scholarship from the Nichiren Shu Overseas Propagation people. Though there's a tremendous amount of freaking Western ideas of spiritual work being somehow attached to this Western rhetoric of faith, soul, praying, all this crud that has all this charisma of self and other, it doesn't belong anywhere in Buddhist scholarship, nowhere. But here it is, constantly being bubbling up in here, and I have to believe that these people know better. That the only reason these transcriber or these translators, the people who print these translations to a Western audience specifically, are trying to speak in a language they don't understand. They think that by using these magical terms that they'll reach a Western audience better. Look, Buddhism is about reason and rationale, about real experience. This has to stop. This is why I published a whole series of all of the Gosho Zenshu with language corrected very carefully, analyzing Nichiren's meaning in everything he wrote, being careful not to distort his meaning exactly as these translators should have, and removing that westernized abhorrent translation of these mystical forces. It just doesn't belong in Buddhism. All right, I'm going off again. I've had a rough morning. My mother, a little 87-year-old woman, has been, her life has been hacked on her computer. Some unscrupulous people out there will take advantage of the elderly, getting them engaged in conversation. People, older people, what we do when we get old is we're so starved for attention and relationship that if somebody's willing to engage us, we'll tell them everything. And now they've taken all of her money, her retirement investments, her money out of her bank. She can't pay her bills. She's in a moment of great, great stress. And I spoke to her this morning, and I have to confess, it elevated my level of stress, right? And so it's a great reminder of our Buddhist practice, why we practice Buddhism. Not only to handle that stress and that anxieties of all sorts of things in life, but to actively, proactively engage our Buddha mind so that in our daily lives, we don't go down those paths that lead us to great stressful situations by our own ignorance. I don't even like the language of they take advantage of the elderly. Well, the elderly need to be wiser. I mean, whatever happened to our idea of the elderly being the wisest among us? And now we see them as poor, frail victims. I'm not saying that without compassion, please don't be angry with me. I'm just pointing at a general age of degeneration that we live in. It's a visceral example, certainly for me, that my mother is that she told me some of the questions this guy was asking her, and I thought, hello, what did you need to get a clue that this guy was totally invading every aspect of your life? He asked her about investments and does she have any other modes of income or money coming in. What business was this total stranger? What ruse did he play on her in to justify these questions and for her to volunteer answers? Ah! It breaks the brain. And yet, right, this is the world we live in. Greed, anger, stupidity. We can be really stupid at times. So we chant so that we can catch ourselves being stupid and go, ah, 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 ah. You see this, you know what's happening here, stop it. That's our Buddha-ness. Catching us. Protecting us from even going down that road so that our lives can gradually become more liberated from those tendencies and conditions. That's why we practice awaken my Buddha mind so that I can be much more aware, so aware that I'm not to the point where those situations don't even arise. Namo myo rengeko. Yeah. Let's live that life, okay? So I'm running into another translation. There's a supposition made here that I'm not sure I agree with, and it's always in the introduction, right? Because the introduction is written not necessarily by the translators, although I have issues with them. In this introduction, and I'll just read it, the lengthy letter addressed to lay priest Soya Kyoshin and Ota Kingo, or Jomyo, preaches the doctrine of the five principles as a guideline for propagation while requesting cooperation in collecting sutras and books. So these are fellow scholars Nichiren's having a dialogue with, and he's teaching them about the correct practice of Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lotus Sutra. And as he's doing that, he's also requesting of them some study materials and so forth. And this is the guy we need to emulate, right? He's giving us the perfect example. Somebody who is assiduous in his practice. His resolution is super strong. And yet he still continues to study. Because we're never completely convinced. That's samsara. We always have to work on witnessing our highest potentials, our manifesting our highest potentials, mind states, yeah? And that also includes being able to be an effective communicator. When somebody asks Nichiren a question, he wants to be able to, obviously, quote from here, there, and everywhere to demonstrate that he doesn't need to be right. All he has to do is point out all the places throughout history since Shakyamuni first started talking about this, sharing it, that makes it obvious how to do this correctly. No fluff, no addition, right? So this revolves around something I've talked to you about before, is teacher, teaching. What is that? Because ultimately we self-teach. Nobody teaches you anything, truly. What you learn is on the basis of your awareness, your tendencies, the way you hear, the way you hear specific words, the way you pay attention to your own thoughts. This is all, it's a very complicated assimilation of information that our minds go through. Otherwise, we just snap our fingers and be Buddha. But we have to work at it. And working at it means invoking it, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, studying about it, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. The more I learn about what I'm instantiating and what it represents in my experience of life, the more conviction I have and the stronger my Daimoku and the more I awaken. That's the process, right? That's the practice. So Nichiren is doing it. All right. This writing is highly esteemed next to the five major works of Nichiren Shonin, declaring at the outset that the precious medicine, the true Dharma, is needed to treat serious patients in the latter age of degeneration, slanderers of the true Dharma, and offenders of the five rebellious errors. Rebellious being counter to Buddha-ness, Buddhahood. The training, the teaching, every aspect of it, right? The discounting of it, the complete ignorance of it, so on and so forth. Nichiren discusses the people in the latter day age of degeneration to be rescued, liberated, see, saved. That's just not the right word. The teacher who saves them, or who liberates them, right, who creates the condition by which all of us can teach ourselves, enlighten ourselves, and the period when the true Dharma spreads and the country where it spreads. So this is from the expedient means and the teachings and contemporaneously to Nichiren's own life, right? Which we can easily translate to our own lives in whichever country we're in under whatever leadership and the politics and the environment and the society and the education that we find ourselves wrapped in, yeah? It should be noted, now this is the part that annoys me a little bit. It should be noted that the sequence of propagation, Joel, one of the five principles expounded in the doctrine during the pre-Sado period, has been conspicuously changed to teacher, she, in this writing. We may say that this change in terminology represents Nichiren's sense of mission realized through practicing the Lotus Sutra as preached. In other words, by Shakyamuni. So there it is. There's this little rub about teaching versus sequence of propagation or being a propagator. Let me ask a simple question to the person who wrote this introduction. If you're propagating something, are you not teaching it? If you're a teacher, are you not propagating? Can either of those terminologies really been seen as a major shift? We'll see as we read this translation how that might play out. But I think this is a false argument. This is an academic picking at things. I would say that whatever he's pointing at, or she is pointing at, I'm quite sure they're all male in here, is that before his last exile and after his last exile at Sado Island for 3 years or so, Nichiren was older, had developed his teaching style, his depth of knowledge and experience, and certainly collected more followers, and the politics of the nation had changed over that 3 years. And he was preparing his third remonstration, after which he would retire to Mount Minobu, somewhat protecting himself while still carrying out propagation. And certainly his students, his disciples, viewed him differently in that later time period of his life. And so for him to maybe make a small language differentiation between his traveling the country and remonstrating and preaching in person, propagating the teaching, while after his exile, remaining in one place and sending out the propagation, maybe to him that was a distinction of teaching on the road versus teaching from a singular point or location. Okay, I might give you that. He may have shifted his language a little bit to be one step removed, if you will, but he's still talking about exactly the same thing. Anyway, let's get to what Nichiren wrote. A letter to lay priest Lord Soya. Lord. Preface: the five principles of propagation. In other words, how to teach. Yeah? So, on reflection, he begins, in order to cure a serious sickness or illness, we have to prepare an excellent medicine. Likewise, to save offenders of the five rebellious errors and slanderers of the true Dharma, there is no way but to administer to them the essential Dharma, the five characters or seven characters of Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Yeah? Because we don't want to just tell them Buddha. We want to tell them pay attention and inculcate into your life the resolve to invoke Buddha in you personally. That's Namu. As for the time after the passing of the Buddha, in short, like Nichiren is ever short, it is divided into the age of the true Dharma, a 1,000-year period following the Buddha's death, or extinction, age of the semblance Dharma, the second millennium, and the latter, or later age of degeneration, 10,000 years period following the second millennium after the demise of the Buddha, the extinction of the Buddha. I don't know why they have so much trouble just using that word that Shakyamuni himself used, extinction. No remainder, no soul, no bag of Shakyamuni. Regarding the teaching of the Buddha, he calls it teaching there, there exists a difference between the Hinayana and Mahayana teachings, between the prejudiced and the perfect teachings, provisional and true teaching, the exoteric and esoteric teachings. Speaking of the country to which the teachings spread, differences exist between the centrally located Buddhist country and the peripheral countries. There it is, propagation teaching, right? Concerning the caliber of the people who hear the teachings, there are differences between those who commit and those who do not commit the five rebellious acts and the grave errors of slandering the true Dharma. As for the teacher, propagator of the teaching, anyway, between two vehicles, Sravaka and Pratyekabuddha, and bodhisattvas, between bodhisattvas from other worlds and those from the Saha world, and bodhisattvas guided by Buddhas in the theoretical section, such as Manjushri and Maitreya, and direct disciples of the original true Buddha, such as bodhisattvas appearing from under the ground. That's you and me. So are you getting used to this flowery talk here with what he's actually saying? When Nichiren says, there's a difference between the unenlightened teacher and sage teacher, just like there's a difference between the two vehicles, Sravaka and Pratyekabuddha, and bodhisattvas, just as much as there's a difference between bodhisattvas from other worlds, in other words, personages, capabilities, potentials, bodhisattvas, versus or as compared to those from this Saha world, you and me. We instantiate, we manifest this potential of bodhisattva in this samsaric life. There's a difference between being a human and instantiating bodhisattva than conceptually thinking about bodhisattva. See, Buddhism's about the mind, how the mind works, yeah? And bodhisattva is guided by Buddhas in the theoretical section, such as Manjushri and Maitreya, and direct disciples of the original true Buddha, such as Buddhas appearing from under the ground. Same comparison. In the expedient means, in the sutras, there are personages representing the mission of instantiating, manifesting Buddha, while we, you and I, born in the future, are actual manifestations of that effort, inculcated in our being, just like everything in the universe. Follow? Accordingly, the four reliances, the four categories of bodhisattvas, whom Buddhists relied on for guidance after the extinction of the Buddha, propagated the Dharma in accordance with what was transmitted from the Buddha without preaching arbitrarily. They just followed the words of Shakyamuni, wrote. Well, that's how they learn a song, right? Repetition, memorization. How could they teach any other way? But what he's indicating is that they would refrain from adding their own testimony and their own colorful stories, their own folklore to a quite extensive body of teachings by Shakyamuni, right? So this is labeled Chapter 1, the Lotus Sutra and the Caliber of People. I guess you know what we're going to read about here, right? Capacity and time. Just a prediction. Do not preach the Lotus Sutra impulsively to those who are too ignorant to understand the great Dharma of the Lotus Sutra, and therefore never slander it. So this is the first rule of propagation. Don't just run around chanting this all over the place in airports, handing people flowers and telling them to repeat Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Take a moment to create a relationship with a person so that they're at least open to, prepared to hear what you have to say about the correct practice of Buddhism. Some people won't want to hear it at all. You can't force it into people. And this is something several groups and sects have a lot of problems with. They characterize Nichiren as a warrior who breaks the bones of other people's thinking in order to force them to practice Buddhism correctly or to practice Buddhism at all, right? Shakyamuni. What they fail to understand is that Shakyamuni is necessary with other Buddhists who are practicing incorrectly. They have to have their minds torn away from the illusions and destructive teachings that they're promoting, because that's an active cancer against Buddhism entirely. Yeah, Shakyamuni, you have to force them to look strongly at what they believe and change their minds to correctly practice Buddhism. This is a big part of Nichiren's life, right? He's got all these major schools of Buddhism around him that are destroying Japan, destroying the minds of the people under the guise of Buddhism. That requires tremendous effort to prove to those people that what they're doing is incorrect, and put them on the correct path. Shakyamuni, all the way, got it. So this statement is speaking directly to that and saying non-Buddhists, people who don't know anything about Buddhism, You can't just run up to them and shove this down their mind. People have to be open to it so that they can have the capacity to understand what you're talking about. If someone isn't open to it, they won't have the capacity to understand what you're talking about. And you, in fact, are then guilty of not respecting the practice. That's what that means. Instead, preach it by all means to those who are evil and slanderers of the Lotus Sutra. The Sutra preaches the true Mahayana teaching. They're Buddhist, but they're practicing incorrectly. Yeah, nail them. You got to fix them because it's incumbent upon you. That's your environment. It's a reflection of you. Of course you have to correct it. The Buddha preaches to Shariputra in the second facet of the Lotus Sutra, quote, "This sutra may not be expounded in the midst of the ignorant," chapter 3, a parable, "and to the 80,000 great bodhisattvas, such as Medicine King Bodhisattva in the fourth facet, quote, "This sutra is the Dharma secretly treasured by Buddhas, which may not be shared with people at random," end quote. Right? What do we know ignorant means in these texts? They simply don't know about Buddhism. You can speak to those people, but you have to cultivate them and slowly check them out for their willingness and see if they're even interested before you then dive into the practice. Doesn't that make sense? Chapter 10, The Teacher of the Dharma. The meaning of these statements is that the Lotus Sutra should not be preached lightly to those who are ignorant of Buddhism. There it is. How more clearly could it be said? And have not yet slandered the true Dharma. Right? They haven't had the opportunity to get it wrong. They don't even know. It is stated in the seventh facet, Never Despising Bodhisattva, chapter, quote, "When he," never despising Bodhisattva, "saw the four kinds of devotees in the distance, he went to them with a purpose to preach." Quote, "Some of the four kinds of devotees had impure minds. They got angry, spoke ill of him, saying," quote, "Where did this ignorant monk come from?" And, quote, "The people struck him with a piece of wood or tile or stone," end quote. The difference between statements in the second and fourth facets of the Lotus Sutra and those in the seventh facet is as great as that between heaven and earth or fire and water. It totally makes sense, right? If people are practicing Buddhism, know what Buddhism is, and they're practicing correctly, then we practice with them. But certainly in the context of his lifetime, a lot of people in Japan were convinced about Pure Land or Zen or Amida Buddha, Amida Butsu, yeah, Nembutsu. They were actively practicing incorrectly. And then it's incumbent upon you as a Lotus Sutra Buddhist to correct them, to attempt to teach them the correct practice. But, you know, if you walk up onto some pagan or Baptist or whatever, and they're completely convinced, falling on their rugs and praying to Islam and, you know, the afterlife. You have to be careful about broaching that conversation because they just may not be mentally able to hear what you're suggesting. They'll just react. They'll see you as a great flame or something negative, something to be beheaded as an enemy. They're not prepared to hear something so radically different. But you might befriend them. You might befriend them if they want to befriend you. If the opening is there, this is shoju. This is practicing to people's capacity. Elevating them slowly, if the opportunity arises. You can't force it. But you must force it with other Buddhists. Because they're doing it wrong. And that's very, very bad. You see? Question. Of the two ways of propagation preached in this sutra, which should we follow in order to spread the teaching of this sutra? Answer. I do not think I should interpret them arbitrarily. There are many references to them in the writings of Grandmaster Tendai and Malo, who listened to the Buddha preaching at the Lotus Sutra on Mount Sacred Eagle. Let me cite one or two here. So, Nichiren is acknowledging, as Shakyamuni does throughout all of his teachings, that people are different. And situations are different. So, he's going to go through some of the examples from the scholarship itself. The words and phrases of the Lotus Sutra, Facile 10, says, quote, a question was asked whether never disparaging Bodhisattva was in such a hurry in preaching the Lotus Sutra while the Buddha had not expounded it for 42 years after appearing in the world. Right? Even Shakyamuni himself took a great deal of pains to teach level by level by level for 42 years before he dropped the Lotus Sutra on everyone and then preached that for 8 years. Shakyamuni himself showed you. Although in many ways, because he was presenting such information so radically different from the other belief systems in his day, you could say that was Shakyabuku. But it wasn't intended as Shakyabuku outside of the Buddhist order. The Shakyabuku was happening between Buddhists. It was answered that the Buddha preached the Hinayana teaching first for the people who had possessed the seed of Buddhahood by listening to the Lotus Sutra in the past life. In other words, they were curious about Buddhism. They had heard something about it. They were open to hearing the teaching. Whereas never disparaging Bodhisattva sowed the seed of Buddhahood by preaching the true Mahayana teaching of the Lotus Sutra for the people who had never heard of the sutra in a past life. So he was teaching Shoju style Buddhism, the culminating teaching of Buddhism, to those who had no predilections, no previous ideas about what Buddhism was. Right? You don't need to take somebody who's never been initiated into Buddhist thought. You don't need to take them through the early stages of teachings, the later stages, because we're in a latter day. We're in the age where people have the capacity already in them. Remember, bodhisattvas of the earth, original enlightenment, we're there. Now, what you might call the remedial stuff, the earlier teachings, the provisional teachings, the expedient means, they're still useful as reference to help us chug along and get deeper insights. But the teaching and the Buddhism we practice is Lotus Sutra. Follow? This interpretation by Grandmaster Tendai means that as we look at the past of those who listened to the pre-Lotus Sutra sutras, such as the Flower Garland Sutra preached at the Place of Enlightenment, the Agama Sutras preached in Deer Park, the Sutra of the Great Assembly preached at Daihobo, and the Wisdom Sutra preached at the White Heron Pond, including both the Hinayana and Mahayana and provisional and true teachings, as well as the four doctrinal teachings and the eight teachings, the four doctrinal teachings plus the four methods of teaching, they had received the pure and perfect seeds of Buddhahood in the eternal past at the time of the eternal Buddha and the great universal wisdom Buddha. Nevertheless, because of their errors of slandering the one vehicle, teaching of the Lotus Sutra, they have been unable to attain liberation, wandering instead around the world of darkness for as long as 500 million dust particle kalpas and 3,000 dust particle kalpas, quote unquote, However, the seed they had received grew gradually until finally the time had come for them to hear the Lotus Sutra on Mount Sacred Eagle and to become aware of the gem, Buddhahood, given by the Buddha in the past. In other words, the original enlightenment. So, see, people can slowly evolve over time, but that yearning for that enlightenment is there. For 40 years or so, till the Lotus Sutra was preached, the Buddha preached the Hinayana and Provisional Sutras to them in order to prepare their capacity to understand, as the Buddha taught that even those who had established a relationship with the Lotus Sutra in their past, might speak ill of it for various reasons, because they didn't fully comprehend it, right? Question. How about the bodhisattvas who attained Buddhahood by listening to the distinct and perfect teachings of the Flower Garland Sutra and the ordinary people who attained enlightenment by hearing the Sutra of Meditation on the Buddha of Infinite Life? What about them? Answer. Taking into account the time when they attained enlightenment, they seem to have gained from the merit of the respective sutras. In reality, however, the seed of Buddhahood had been sown in them in the eternal past, either in the 500 million dust particle kalpas or 3,000, whichever hyperbolic definition of time you want to use, in the past, enabling them to attain Buddhahood with the respective provisional sutras as an auxiliary case. In other words, there's never a denial in Shakyamuni's teachings of the Lotus Sutra that the Lotus Sutra is absolutely the only way to attain enlightenment. The purpose of self-practice of the Lotus Sutra is to make it absolutely abundant that anyone, no matter what their state of being in this age, smart, stupid, rich, poor, whatever culture, whatever language, doesn't matter. If you're a sentient being, and insentient, but that's a different conversation. If you're a sentient being, you have a mind, then you have Buddha. You simply need to enact it, invoke it. And the method is Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. It doesn't mean that all the previous teachings never produced anyone with a Buddha realization, even though for Hinayana specifically, Buddha-ness wasn't a part of their actual program. They spoke of Buddha, but their enlightenment was something of the Pratyeka Buddha next step. Really closer to Bodhisattva, but without the propagation aspect of it. Not inculcated into that aspect of Bodhisattva. So it was very limited experience of Buddhahood. After Hinayana, though, Buddhahood is expressed and defined, if you will, as a future arrival, a future goal. But some people had the capacity in those years, even in Hinayana, to attain some form of liberation, some form of enlightenment. But as it's stated in several sutras, it was incomplete. It was only an egotistical enlightenment, a self-enlightenment, without including the environment. And you can't do that. That foils the rules of Buddhism, because there really is no separation between self, quote-unquote, and environment, quote-unquote. We're all the same process, right? So the enlightenment of the earlier teachings, very seldom as it was, though it might have been experienced by those few, was incomplete. So that's what he's talking about here. Question, is there any evidence for this claim? Answer, the Lotus Sutra, Facile 5, 15th chapter on the appearance of bodhisattvas from under the ground, right? Future practitioners of the Lotus Sutra. I have always taught them in their past existences or existence, And as soon as they saw me and heard my preaching in this life, they received my teachings by conviction and confidence, entering into the wisdom of the Buddha. Because this is a self-realizing practice. That's what that's saying. Because of their previous knowledge of Buddhism, because of our study, and because of our time, this time, we are people, sentient minds, with the built-in capacity to realize Buddhahood with very little training. We just simply need to know how to invoke it. This is the incredible simplicity of the Lotus Sutra. As soon as they saw me and heard my preaching in this life, Namo Myoho Renge-kyo, boom. Interpreting this, Grandmaster Tendai states in his words and phrases of the Lotus Sutra, quote, people today were taught and received the seeds of Buddhahood in the eternal past. Okay, in other words, our capacity to understand that enlightenment is an integral part of our existence. Doesn't that make more sense, right? Grandmaster Miao Lo, on the other hand, declares that in his annotations on the words and phrases of the Lotus Sutra, quote, although it is in the present when people gain the benefit of attaining Buddhahood, the seed of that Buddhahood was sown in the eternal past, in the Big Bang. In other words, this teaching that Buddhahood is a constant, an aspect that is the life engine of this universe. Buddhahood is a state of witnessing that process in action, not separate from, not in another place. You see? And in his commentary on the profound meaning of the Lotus Sutra, quote, thus I know that the preaching of Shakyamuni Buddha today is for those in whom the seed of Buddhahood was sown in the beginningless past. He's obviating something that has been an integral part of everything that manifests of the potential in the universe. I do not have to explain what is said in the sutra and its annotations, which are very clear in meaning. It is like a woman, regardless if she is a royal princess or a maidservant, unless she becomes pregnant by the Son of Heaven, her child will never be the king of a country. Okay, that's a very pragmatic earthly example. It's kind of limited, but I get it. Question. How about those who attain Buddhahood by means of such scriptures as the Great Sun Buddha Sutra? Well, does this interlocutor don't understand what Nichiren just said? It doesn't matter what sutra they studied. What matters is their attitude, their intent, their conviction. Answer, there are a variety of opinions, all of which are too complicated to mention here. Nonetheless, it is important to mention that any sutra without preaching sowing, maturing, and harvesting of the seed of Buddhahood is the same as the Hinayana doctrine of turning the body into ashes and annihilating consciousness. It's a very self-ego practice. Unless you understand that you have to cultivate a different state of mind, train your mind, you can't just simply annihilate the body and be a nihilist. What's the way you said it in here? Annihilating consciousness. Well, Buddhahood is consciousness. It's like throwing the boat out from underneath you because you found a leak in it. And yet the doctrine of attaining Buddhahood with the present body, asserted by Shingon, true word masters, is like a poor man willfully claiming himself to be king and inviting the death sentence as a result. Shingon masters today are exactly like men such as Wang Mang and Chao Kao, who died in attempts to usurp power. They just wanted the power. They didn't want to do the work. Contemplating the time after the death of the Buddha, the extinction of the Buddha, in light of the capacity of people and method of preaching during the Buddha's lifetime mentioned above, we see the three periods following the passing of Shakyamuni Buddha, the extinction of the Buddha, the ages of the true Dharma, semblance Dharma, and the latter age of degeneration. In the 2000-year period of the ages of the true Dharma and semblance Dharma, there existed people who had the seed of Buddhahood planted in them, just as in the pre-Lotus Sutra years of 40 years or so. This was the period when care was needed not to preach the true Dharma of the Lotus Sutra arbitrarily. They weren't ready. They couldn't understand. Now, however, we live in the latter age of degeneration when those who made connections with the Lotus Sutra during the Buddha's lifetime have gradually dwindled, and people with the capacity to attain Buddhahood by listening to the provisional or true teachings have all disappeared. Thus, this is the time when the seed of Buddhahood of the Lotus Sutra should forcibly be planted. In the same manner as never despising Bodhisattva appearing in the latter age of degeneration, beating the poisonous drum. To Buddhists, it's time to get it right. Stop doing these magical, mystical things. Scholars today, however, are confused with the time and capacity of people to understand and believe the teachings. As a result, some scholars spread the Hinayana teachings. Even today, it's going on. Others preach the provisional Mahayana doctrines, while still others expound the one vehicle doctrine of the Lotus Sutra. They do not seem to understand the reason why the seed of Buddhahood should be planted with the five characters of the Daimoku, or the seven characters. Yes, the Daimoku is the title, but Namu is essential in the practice of the title. Scholars of the Shingon True Word School are especially confused. Although they praise the Bodhisattva way, in contrast to the two vehicles, Sravaka and Pratyekabuddha ways, according to the three Shingon Sutras, they do not explain why the one vehicle teaching is superior to the three kinds of teachings applicable to Bodhisattvas and men of the two vehicles. There is no way for anybody to attain Buddhahood immediately with his present body through such Shingon doctrine, not to speak of the possibility of inanimate beings such as grasses and trees attaining Buddhahood. Oh yeah, that's way out of their understanding. Truthfully, however, when such Shingon masters as Subhakarashima, Vajrabodhi, and Amoghasivara arrived in China from India, the great teaching of Tendai was prevalent, though they had never heard of it in India. Foreseeing it difficult to propagate their cherished sutras, which they brought with them from China, they convinced Akarya Ishing to side with them in stealing the Tendai doctrine, incorporating it into such Shingon Sutras as the Great Sun Buddha Sutra, right? The great manipulation, the thievery of Subhakarashima and others. And lying that it exists originally in India, it never did. All the people of China, the emperor and his subjects, as well as Grandmaster Kobo and Jikaku in Japan, trusted them without discerning their deception. There were other schools as well, though we need not mention them here. Of all the Buddhist masters in China and Japan, Grandmaster Dengyo was the only one who surmised the situation, though he was not yet sure of it. In the end, Tripitaka Master Subhakarashima, upon his death, was censured by Yama, the king of hell, to repent on his past errors. Tripitaka Master Amoghasvajra, on the other hand, returned to India to abandon the mantras and then came to China again, where he established the precept dais of the Tendai Buddhism, enshrining the Lotus Sutra as the most venerable one, the Honzon. In between the matrix store Ramandala and Ramandala, these events prove that both Tripitaka masters repented of their mistakes. It's getting a little long. Two more brief questions. Why are the scholars of the Shingon School of Buddhism today unaware of this, or they act like they are? Answer, just as it is said that one cannot see one's own eyebrows, it is not easy to see our own mistakes. Grandmaster Chi Xiang abandoned the Three Discourses School to become a disciple of Grandmaster Tendai. But less learned scholars today do not know this. Fat Sang and Cheng Quang left the Flower Garland School to seek refuge in Grandmaster Tendai. But scholars of the Flower Garland School do not remember this. Tripitaka Master Xuan Chuang, I suspect they didn't talk about it too much either. Tripitaka Master Xuan Chuang and Grandmaster Tzu En abandoned the false doctrine of the five mutually distinctive natures to move to the one vehicle teaching of the Lotus Sutra, but scholars of the Dharma Characteristic School stubbornly refused to admit it. Question, what is your proof for such claims? Study. Answer, some change allegiances in heart, but not in body. Others change allegiances in body, but not in heart. Some change allegiances in both heart and body, while others change allegiances neither in body or in heart. I will explain these in a separate writing. Allow me to bypass them here as they digress from the purpose of writing this letter. Okay. So we'll start with chapter 2 next. I think, though, that you already understand what he was saying there, right? You might be a lot of bad pressed about the club you're with right now, but you still believe in their principles and what they say. You just go join a different club, but you maintain your beliefs. So you change allegiances in body, but not in mind. Or you know people who completely change their minds about what they believe, but they stay in the same place because they like the team that they belong to, right? They change their allegiance in mind, but not in body, right? Simple to understand. All right. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, please, if you're not subscribed already, simply because it helps our propagation. Yeah. We use YouTube to do some work for us, to make sure that other people who are curious about Buddhism can find this channel. And with that, I give you great appreciation for having found this channel and subscribing. And to my patrons who help this channel continue to grow, Namo Myoho Rinpoche, you're tremendous, and we appreciate you greatly. And I will see you in the next one, chapter 2, right? Namo Myoho Rinpoche. Take care of your health, please. Be kind to yourself, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye for now.